Hey guys, and welcome to Fatherhood. You are listening to the Dad's Group podcast, a place where you and I get to connect with incredible leaders, shape the future of fatherhood together, and dig deeper into what is happening inside the minds and hearts of new and expecting fathers. Today, we'll be listening to Dr. Chris May, who has studied nursing, specialized in pediatrics nursing and midwifery, and has worked as a pediatrics diabetes nurse educator. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands we all meet on today. I would like to pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging, and any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people we have listening to this episode today.
Thank you so much for joining us, Chris. The purpose of these interviews is really to connect and engage with our broader audience, both new fathers, new mothers, but also some of those people who work in the fatherhood space. And the purpose of today's interview is really just to hear a bit more about your story, Chris. I've got up here in front of me that Dr. Chris May is a manager of perinatal mental illness, the School of Health Sciences, College of Health Medicines and Wellbeing at the University of Newcastle, and a research assistant. Is that an outdated statement, Chris? Can you tell us what are your current roles and positions at the moment?
I work with, it's not an outdated statement, but it's sort of, it's the one from the university website, which is fairly inaccurate. But anyway, I'm working here with SMS for Dads at the moment. That's my paid work. I've been doing dads classes with HANA New England Health for 15 years or something now. So we do those. My background is in children's nursing and midwifery, and then I sort of moved over into academia as part of a, I wouldn't say a midlife crisis, but you know, change buses. And that's what I do now, is a smattering of different kinds of work with SMS for Dads, which is partly liaising with services, but also helping to work on the program, develop that and make it betterer. And, you know, there's also some work with the uni doing supervision and things like that. So it's a mixed bag, and building a house on the side.
That sounds like you're quite busy, Chris, and doing a whole lot of things. So let me get it straight. You studied midwifery. You also studied, what was the other thing you studied?
Well, I was, when I left school, I went into nursing. That was
nursing.
A long time ago now, but so it wasn't a big thing for men to do that. I trained in that old hospital system, but as soon as I finished at St. Vincent's in Darlinghurst in Sydney, I moved over into paediatrics and worked there for a long time. So I specialised in paediatric nursing. And then at one point I was chasing my bride, actually. She left the country, I think, to get away from me, but I followed her. I realised later, you know, you can't go any further than Scotland to get away from someone on this planet. And that's where she
went. Good to know.
Yeah, so I followed her over there, and I ended up being offered a position in a midwifery course, because there was a seat that wasn't filled, and so that was a bit of an accident, but a fantastic experience. And then back here in Australia, I came back, I got given a job as a pediatric diabetes nurse educator, and I ended up specializing in that, did that course and published in that and worked in that. That was sort of where I started doing research, really. That was a funny thing. I got an award doing that. It was the Open Award in the Southeast Sydney Area Health Research Prize thing. And I was the first non-medical practitioner to ever get a prize in that. What I really learned in that work was working with families, kids with diabetes. It just became apparent to me that when the mum-dad relationship was working in that family, where dads were more involved, that those families seemed to cope a lot better. And so that really stimulated my thinking about fathering. And when I made a relationship with Richard Fletcher and started thinking about moving over into academia, that was my focus, was on fathering in families where there's a child with disability. That's what I was going to do my PhD in. But, when I was researching that, and you get this really enjoyable thing when you do a PhD. You don't get paid much, but you get this opportunity to read and research for a year, pretty much. as you develop your thinking, it became apparent to me that this parenting partnership stuff, which I didn't know anything about, was really important. And so I ended up doing my PhD exploring the importance of parenting partnerships in families where there's a child with diabetes. With autism. And what came out of that was that, you know, autism is a very stressful thing for parents. It's these kids, they're embarrassing and challenging, and you don't know what's going to happen with them. And, you know, they don't engage very well with people. And so pairing them is very, very hard. And but the result of that study showed that it was similar to what you found in other cohorts, that the mums and dads were both really highly stressed, which is what we expected. But the most powerful predictor of their parenting stress wasn't the socioeconomic position or where they sat in terms of their beliefs in their ability to raise and manage a child with autism, or how severe their child's autism was. It was how well they worked together as a mum and dad. And that sort of work has been informative for us, and it's been a big part of the focus of SMS for Dads now, which is focuses on one thing is attachment, so the dad's relationship with his child. The second part of those messages really focuses on dad's relationship with his partner and how well they're working together. And the third part is getting him to focus and think about how well he's going. So it's his relationship with himself. So yeah, it's a nice story about clinical practice, shifting your thinking, and then that academic research really informing what we're now doing with SMS for Dads. So although we might think we're here in ivory towers, you know, wasting our time, research can really translate into practice change. And
yeah.
And it's interesting. I go into services and talk with my old colleagues and have discussions with them about this stuff. And some of them just dismiss it, usually less so now, but sometimes the health practitioners sort of place themselves at the center of what's going on. They think that their work is really important. My experience is that parents pretty much use health practitioners to get what they need. And that that they're not, they might think they're important to the family, their practice, their skills, their knowledge is important, their ability to facilitate capacity for that family to get what they need is important. But in reality, I think for most families, it's the mum and dad relationship that's important. And one of the things that comes out of that that's, I think, really interesting is that when I went to work and research with these families of kids with autism, I said to them that I was interested in working with mum and dads and exploring what was going on with mum and dads and who were raising a child with autism together. And these families in the autism schools where I went into said, well, where are you going to find them? Because there's a myth in the autism community that 80% of mums and dads are separated and divorced. And in these very schools, I said, well, I don't think that's necessarily true. What about you guys? And they said, oh, no. In every case, they went, oh, no, we've been really lucky here. So these parents were aware of this myth. They believed in it. But when they looked around them to see what was going on, and the evidence was that they knew that that wasn't the case in their community. And in fact, in looking at that research, there's a couple of things that I think we should know about. If you look at the data for Australian 15-year-olds that are living under the same roof with their biological mum and dad, it's around 80%. It's around 78 to 80% are still living under the same roof with their biological mum and dad. So the divorce and separation rate is much higher than that. But the risk factors for divorce and separation rate, the biggest risk factor, there's a couple, but the biggest one is not having children. So you're much more likely to get to split up if you don't have kids. Parents tend to stick to it. The reason I said 15 was the second risk factor there is the age of your kids. Parents stay together for the duration of their business of raising that child. And then they might decide, well, you know, it's been a bit of a loveless situation, and you can take the car and the dog and all, you know, that sort of stuff. But that's a really big reality. The other thing that's really interesting in that is that having a child with a disability doesn't shift that.
Mm.
And if you ask pediatric nurses, they all say, yeah, of course it does. You know, there's, because they sort of see what's in front of them. But the reality is it doesn't. And families of children, families where they're raising a child with autism, which is right up there in the stress levels of parenting stress, the divorce and separation rate is actually no different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that talks a lot about how important the dad and mum role are and how important they are to each other.
I think something that we understand into a bit more detail in your experience is exactly that. And you've talked about that mum and dad relationship, the how critical that is in predicting, you know, the outcomes for, I guess, the child, that loving, caring, safe environment, and also the self-awareness of mum and dad, and as a couple, the self-awareness as individuals is really important. Can you take us, if you can, into an environment that you recall from the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, where you've seen a change from a couple that might have been maybe not going so well, but because of connecting with programs or yourself or SMS for Dads or one of those different levers of support for those new mums and dads, seen a change there? Is there an experience that you can share with us where essentially, you know, the work that you're doing and the work that a lot of people are doing in that fatherhood space and that perinatal space is having an impact?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of twists in that. One is when you're talking about that, it reminds me of an interview with a mum who, so in the work, you can't help it when you're researching that you will influence the way people are thinking about what you're doing, because you're putting surveys and you ask them to fill in questions about things that they may not be thinking about. And I remember a mum, when we were actually doing that study, who said down the road a bit that she'd really made a rod for her own back because she wasn't thinking about parenting in partnership. She was trying to do, and there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on. The relationship that dads and mums have with parenting is, to some degree, of course, it's determined by the individual's approach to what they're doing. But there's a whole lot of structural and cultural things in the background that make a really important contribution to the way that this pans out in families. Things like dad's time in paid work, the ways that schools and health systems work with families where they've got a very dyadic mother-child focus. You sort of get channeled, you know, and culled into behaving in certain ways. And the burden of responsibility in dealing with services and really that frontline work with a family with a child with autism often falls on the mums. And they take this on their back. And this mum, in response, and this is just a really simple one, and there are others, but she recognised from the sort of questions, it's that simple, that we were asking her, that she had made a rod for her own back. Those are the words she used. And that she had really taken on the burden of this and forgotten that she had this alternative there. There was another way of doing it. And she said that when she opened up the door to her partner, started sharing the responsibility, giving him more authority in that business, it made everything so much easier. So, there are plenty of other stories in a way, but that one really strikes me because it was such a simple thing. And one of the things that we actually know that happens, and there's a study out of the US that supports this, but in that experience, when I'd start talking to mums about parenting in these interviews, we did a lot of them, we still do a lot of them, they would often talk about me or I. But as you start shifting the focus and saying, well, what happens in that parenting partnership stuff? They start talking about we.
Mm.
When you ask dads and you run exactly the same, it's very similar sort of questions by them, they usually talk about we right from the start. And so
that's something that we find is really important. And I guess it's the cultural shift in that fatherhood space. And talking about it publicly, I think it's important to bring those types of, discussions to a public forum so that we can continue, you know, the benefits of that type of discussion. One of the things that I was going to ask you, Chris, was around that change for the father and maybe an experience where you've seen, or you could even talk to the point around SMS for dads, because again, you're talking about the mums and dad and their relationship, how well they work together. You're running a program, national program called SMS for Dads, that allows new fathers to connect in with a service that sends them messages at about three or so messages a week. Tell us about how you see that bring about maybe a self-awareness change in fathers, or potentially how that increases their awareness of their partner or their child in a way that you're talking about bringing that mum and dad relationship together.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we talk about it more now, in a very frankly, but one of the things that we're really aware of is not blaming dads for, maybe not making as much of a contribution. As I say, the reason for not doing that is because the cultural and systemic factors that really contribute to that, but also not blaming mums. So, terms like gatekeeping and so on, they don't sit well really with us. We've adopted a very strength-based focus in the way we interact with dads, particularly through SMS for Dads and other work we do.
Mm.
So the SMS for Dads has a couple of fundamental assumptions underneath it. They are that he's invested, that he wants to be part of this, and that he's doing everything he can to, you know, make the sort of adjustments to his life that need to be made in order to be, you know, the best dad he can be. And in amongst that is an assumption for the mums that she wants exactly the same thing. So they just really do want to work together. And that makes a lot of sense, because what we're thinking about in the background there is how we can help families to make best use of the resources they've got to do the business of raising a child well together. So SMS for Dads makes those assumptions and therefore quite comfortably talks with him about his relationship with his baby, and we promote that really strongly. So the messages right from the start actually come from the baby. Many of the messages come from the baby, right. And they say things like, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to know you, Dad. And one of them, you know, there's a bit of fun there sometimes. So one of them says, I'm my first poo is going to be black, sticky and tarry, and I'm working on it now for you, Dad. Those, and after the baby's born, there's things like saying, you know, I love looking, my favorite view is staring into your eyes. So we address those messages often in a similar way with a little bit of a dad tone, but a very similar way to what you would do that with mum. And then the messages around his interactions with his partner really do fit into the current context. We're not trying to, you know, engineer social change here. We expect that many dads will be working, and therefore those sort of structural factors mean that he's not going to get as much time. So his role in this is not secondary by any sense of the stretch of the imagination, but it is a different role to what she's got. So a lot of his work in this is supportive. A lot of his work is trying to handle that sort of transition where he's coming back into the family after a day of being out away from it. And so we often send messages that say, tell us she's doing a good job. And the dads write back and say, you know, that's really helped me, because I'm normally a pretty switched on guy, but I just forget to do that. Yeah. So, and when you sent that, I did that. So we work on really simple messages that it's a bit like that nudge sort of principle. We give him some information. So we provide him information. We encourage him to contemplate it. And then at times we say, act on it, you know, do something. And the dads are, they're quite insightful in their responses when we survey them and ask and interview them and things. And they say, it's like a mate tapping me on the shoulder. And that is sort of true, except I think it sort of overestimates perhaps the quality of their mates. No, I don't mean that, but it's really probably more like a really intuitive and well-informed uncle or something who's trodden the ground. And the messages are timed to fit with what's happening at the time. And it's amazing. These dads, they're often going, I can't believe it. The messages, it was like you were looking in the window or something. And so they sort of forget maybe that they gave us the date of birth, but I think they just don't know how predictable the things that happen are going to be.
The things that you're talking about there are around the way in which those fathers interact or engage with those messages. And it's a lovely image to have, that the concept of an uncle or a good friend or a mentor just being there with them during that kind of, I guess, a challenging, sometimes high risk, low sleep environment. I want to understand from your perspective, one of the questions I was going to go into was, how do you evaluate that? Which is, and I'll give you another option of a question if you want to go into a different one, because we want to understand how do you you said you survey them, how do you evaluate that and demonstrate, I guess, to governments or hospitals or practitioners that this is helpful for fathers and mothers in that kind of mum dad working relationship piece. That's to me is important. I've got another question for you as well. But if you're happy to go for that, that would be...
Yeah, I'll run with that one for a little while if you're happy. And we can...
Yeah.
Okay. So I've had this conversation with you, Tom. If we write to these dads and say, was it good? They'll say, sure. Yeah. Because people like to be nice, but we go a bit deeper than that. We've interviewed hundreds of dads now about their experience of SMS with dads. And we ask them... quite specific questions about, did you do what was in this message? Can you remember a message? What message was important to you?
Right.
So we get that sort of qualitative data back. Now, that's not hard benchtop type scientific data. That is what we ideally, in this sort of psychological context, we might want to survey them and say, can we demonstrate in a randomized control trial that when they had SMS for dads, it made a difference to their parenting stress or something like that? We don't have that kind of data. And there's a good reason for that.
And just tell, for those of us who are, new fathers, maybe not researchers, what is actually a randomized control trial?
Oh, randomized control trial.
Just trying to simplify some of the research words.
Yeah, sorry. I do that. So the randomized control trial is the sort of gold standard in scientific research in this kind of space. So you might do that with a medication, because as everyone knows, medications have a placebo effect. So if you can give them a sugar pill and it might cure their depression or something. And that's true. Placebo is actually incredibly effective. So there's a need to ensure that the actual intervention, the thing you're doing, is making a difference. So the way you do that is you have a control group who don't get the intervention. They'll often get an attempt to make sure they're well matched to the intervention group, that something is happening for them that isn't the intervention, so that there's an effect there of just being engaged with them. And then you've got a reasonably well-matched situation where you can say, is the thing that we're doing going to make a difference? We had a go at that with SMS for Dads. The problem was that we were trying to look and see whether we reduced their level of stress. And the issue was we just didn't get enough data back, because SMS for Dads is a really broad-ranging, a big net, and it goes out to lots and lots and lots of dads. And so we're not just working with highly stressed dads. But if we look for other kinds of data that suggest whether or not we're doing a good job here, we, as I said, Mom, we get these interviews where dads say, yep, I am, I do what, you know, I do what the messages tell me sometimes. They, over 80% of the dads who are enrolled in SMS for Dads stay to the end. So that's the, that's a big difference. So that's nearly 2 years of messaging and they stick with it. Do we know whether or not they actually read the messages? Do they go, you know, just into their junk? So yeah, we do, because we monitor whether or not they click on links in the messages. Right. So if they're clicking on links, it says that, you know, a lot of them are actually reading the messages. And then when we interview them, we get other sorts of data from them. So a good example of that is a dad recently. One of the messages says, and we're actually changing it because of COVID and the influence on work. So we've changed this message, which used to say, when you get home at the end of the day, it might be a good idea to take the baby for a walk. And the message is at 160 characters. So it's difficult to fit all this in, but we do it. And it sort of says, you know, you've got to, you can you negotiate this with her so that can happen. The reason for that is we know that the threshold is a difficult time. There's other reasons for that. If he can take the baby for a walk, it gives her a break, gives her a chance to enjoy her house and her time and herself. And then while he's away, he gets one-on-one time with his baby, which dads don't get much of. And then thirdly, when he brings the baby back alive, and she'll be pleased to see him and have more confidence in his ability to do that, because we know that around 40% of mums don't trust anyone, including their partner, with their baby at some stages. They acknowledge that. I think it's actually higher than that. So that's an example of a qualitative data where we interview dads and we get that sort of thing, plus some quantitative data that says we know that they stay into the end, and we know that they're looking at the messages. We also get other kinds of data from just the number of dads that join up. At the moment, we've got funding to roll SMS for dads out to rural and remote Australia. Dads from the urban areas just keep joining up. We don't have funding for it, but we're getting 100 dads a week joining SMS for Dads at the moment. We've had 10,000 dads go through it. So there's a couple of things here. One is it says it resonates with the health professionals and people who are promoting it to dads, but it also says that the dads, I'm sure if dads joined this and it didn't work for them, that the message would get out there and we wouldn't see so many dads enrolling. But what we're seeing is this steady and consistent exponential growth in
That's what's really exciting after all these years of, you know, you're studying this field is seeing not only the need, and I think that's sometimes the challenge is knowing that there's a need for us as fathers or new fathers to connect with some support, but also knowing through research that we're not aware of our need. And I think that awareness or self-awareness in that perinatal stage is changing for fathers in this country, and that's having a big positive influence on the number of people signing up for services like SMS for Dads.
The other thing about it, Tom, is that SMS for Dads has worked outside the system. For Dads has not relied on health. It relies on health professionals who are interested in this space, and really very much of that is around that antenatal education, those carers, the clinic staff and so on. Right. But it hasn't tried to change what's happening in the health system. It's really bypassed that and just said, we can do something for dads. It's cheap. It's easy. There you go. Right. And people have gone, beauty. Let's have some of that.
It's beside this health system rather than trying to actually systemically change that environment.
Yeah, because it's just so big and so hard, you know. And the good thing about this is you don't have to upskill health workers. You don't have, you know, there's not a whole lot of background work that needs to be done within that system to try and make it work. It's just able to go there and say, hey, we've got something for dads. And, you know, the health workers generally, the midwives and child health visitors and stuff just go, oh, thank God, something that we can offer dads. They get it.
That's really exciting to hear, because essentially, like, as we know, there's a huge amount of needs in that perinatal space for mums and for dads. This is one of the key tools which has been demonstrating really great outcomes and is now rolled out nationally. That leads me to my next question, Chris, which is around the multiplier effect of putting different support services together. And I wanted to understand your opinion, you guys, and also Dad's Group and Panda are all working together in this space to support new fathers and families. What's your opinion on the effectiveness? You know, essentially, does 1 + 1 + 1 = 3 in this environment, or does 1 + 1 + 1 = 9 or 50 in terms of SMS for dad? So we, Dad's Group, as a program in the hospitals, antenatal classes and in the community, are forever talking about sign up for SMS for dads. You're a new parent. It's a wonderful program. Here's the reasons on why you should do it. And inside that space, if you're feeling stressed or worried about yourself or your partner, there's a call line called Panda, which we're also partnered with. And Julie, who's the CEO, is very much collaborative in trying to get the message out across the different conduits to fathers. Tell us your experience or your perspective on that, where we're at today, which is a long way from where we were, say, 5 years ago, but where you think that might be in the future, just around that interconnectedness of programs and, I guess, having that father-centric model of support rather than that system design approach where fathers can come if they want to.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I did mention was that I actually did an MBA once. And during that experience, you spend all this time doing that, and I don't know how much I learned, but one of the things I learned in that was that revolutionary change rarely works. But evolutionary change can happen at pace. It can either be extremely slow or shunted along a bit. Having worked in this space and around this space for a long time now, I think we're seeing a lot of change. I think we've got an enormous weight of evidence now around not just the importance of fathers, but how to work with them, what kinds of frameworks can work when you're working with them. The other thing that's happened is that there has been a real shift in the not only the number of services that are available to dads, the number of people who are trying to do stuff with dads, and the number of people that are trying to do stuff with men, but we've just seen it's a shift in the quality and the types of services. So there's more available. And the ways that they're working are different to what might have been offered in the past. So SMS for Dads is just one example, because it is just these short, sharp messages that aren't too intrusive. You know, it's a real awareness of doing things differently. When in the past, the idea was, you know, if we're going to do something for dads, really, most services just rolled out the same model of what they were doing for mums, and in some ways almost saying to them they wanted them to be like mums. Now, I think that still sort of happens, but there's a whole raft of things happening now, and I can't give you a multiplier effect, but I think what we're seeing is a few things. One is, I think we are now seeing people going, oh, you can do stuff for dads and it works. And, you know, they join up, they stay in, they get benefit from it. And the mums like it. The mums love SMS for dads. They're very positive about it. The mums, I think, love the idea of dad heading off to a dad's group and doing something with other blokes. So, and yeah, health workers aren't as scared of it as they were in the past. Yeah. So we've demonstrated now that it can be done. The other thing that is just this evolutionary shift. when I started in this area, you didn't see dads walking prams up and down the street. There has been, dads are more involved in their kids' lives than what they were. Their expectations of fathering have changed, and mum's expectations of dads have changed. This doesn't mean that they're necessarily getting more one-on-one time with their kids than they were a short time ago, but I think all of these things are contributing to the way that dads think about their job, mums think about their job, and services are thinking about what they're doing with dads. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing services now coming to us going, we need to know more about working with dads. So they wouldn't have asked those sort of questions years ago, but they are now. I think it's, as I've talked to you, there's something going on here, which is a sort of in-reach thing where the community is shifting and health services are starting to realise that the ship is going over the horizon, and they've got to try and catch up. And the parents themselves are shifting away from this dyadic mum-child view of parenting to a much more triadic understanding. And as I said, expectations of dads have changed and so on. I don't think that's an accident. I think that's happened because of all of the efforts that have been made in different spaces to do stuff with dads and showing that it can be done.
Chris, that's awesome. It's a perfect way to kind of wrap up. We've talked about, you know, coming from a nursing midwifery background, the mum and dad relationships, how important that is. The programs that you do to support fathers where there hasn't been support in the past. We've also touched on how you evaluate SMS for dads to make sure it is actually helping both, you know, the father, but also that family, the mother, and that connectedness or the attachment that you talked about between the dad and the infant. And we've been able to talk about revolutionary change versus evolutionary change and seeing the integration of, say, SMS for dads, Panda, and dads groups where fathers are with their babies as a way to change or evolutionarily change the communities that we're seeing. And I guess...
Yeah, well, that's the bit that we're hopeful for, Tom. You know, there's a, they have sort of... It reminds me a bit... you know, when you go to pick up your kids from school, you see the mums sort of standing around chatting together and the dads sort of standing like sentinels, you know, waiting for their child to come out, not getting together. And I think that is in some ways where we're at with the fathering. It's a competitive space in some ways. I think we're getting to the point where the dad services are saying, there's no point in us competing. What we want to do is find ways that we can integrate and work together. It may not work across all of them, but I think there is, and this is we're just lucky to be in a time where technology allows us to do this.
Yeah,
I think that's probably one of the biggest things, isn't it, really? That this would be impossible 30 years ago.
On behalf of all the dads and fathers and families, we want to thank you for the work you're doing, Chris. It's been incredible just to hear some of those insights. I'm sure it's just scratching the surface on some of the programs and the experiences that you had. We'd love to have you again.
I really hope you guys enjoyed that episode. And I'm sorry I had to cut this episode here, but at the end of our interviews, we go into a Q&A time. And for privacy's sake, I didn't want to record those questions and answers. But if you would like to find out more about SMS for Dads, then click the Get Support tab on our website at www.dadsgroup.org. We will link it in our podcast notes for you guys. Please remember, this is going to be a big support for us, guys. Please remember to like, subscribe, and review, and please share with any dads and families that may benefit from hearing this podcast. Cheers, guys. Hope you have a great week.